and more. Again, that's the SJAC Holiday Fundraiser and Open Hours Launch Party on Sunday, December 29th at the Social Justice Action Center, 400 Southeast 12th Avenue in Portland. More information can be found at kboo.fm on the right side of the homepage under Community Events.
KBOO is an independent, member-supported, non-commercial, volunteer-powered community radio station. And by making a donation through GiveGuide on kboo.fm/give, you're eligible for over $4,000 worth of free and discounted products from your favorite Portland brands. We're halfway towards our goal, but there's only 2 weeks left, so please go to kboo.fm and click on Donate today.
Andy
My name's Joseph Gallivan. You're listening to Art Focus on KBOO Portland. My guest this week is photographer John Gotchell. His show, 16 Cranes, is on now at Gallery 114 through Saturday, December the 28th, 2019. Thanks for coming back to KBOO, John.
Thank you for having me.
We had you on here a few years ago, and it was Gallery 114, and you were with a photographer. Remind people what that was, because it was a cool show.
It was with a photographer named Megan Petzold, who was a former student of mine. She has amblyopia, and so she made a video which transmitted the sense of how she sees things. Mm-hmm. And anyway, it was a really interesting video, and I was super excited just to be able to exhibit with a former student.
Mm-hmm. So this time, 16 cranes refers to the kind of working cranes you see along the river, along the Willamette.
Correct.
These are the things that unload ships.
Correct.
Basically, right?
Yeah.
They're not construction cranes.
Right.
And you've been out up and down the river, the kind of looking at it like a Superfund site, which mm-hmm. it is still.
Mm-hmm.
So around like Swan Island, Kelly Point Park, all that.
Correct. In between those two, yeah.
Yeah, north of downtown. And I would call this a straight photography show. You know,
it is a straight photography show.
Black and white and color mix, which is
correct,
is heretical apparently.
Right, I was taught not to do such a thing when I was in graduate school, but I decided that was really not an important rule to follow.
Right, and you're shooting digital and you're printing on inkjet,
yes.
Archival inkjet.
Yep.
Okay, and you're doing everything yourself.
Yes.
Right.
Yep.
So people go in, sort of Gallery 114. That's the basement gallery. You go in, turn left, round the desk,
mm-hmm.
and it starts there. I think the numbers start at that end.
That they do. Yes.
So straight away we get into a barge. It's a barge moored in the river, and
mm-hmm.
there's some logs like in the foreground. The background is always this beautiful rolling hills with coniferous trees.
Mm-hmm.
Why did you start? Why is this the number one picture? It's a big, ugly barge, I should say.
It's a big, ugly barge. My intent in this show, because it is a river, which means it's an ecological corridor, but it's also a industrial corridor. I wanted in my photographs to show how the two appear today. So a lot of what I zoomed in on is the industrial quality of it, but there's trees, animals that live on this river, and I wanted to juxtapose those.
Mm-hmm.
I didn't want to just focus on the industrial stretches. I didn't want to ignore that and just show what a beautiful sunset on the river looks like. I wanted them to be a little bit confounding.
Mm-hmm. It makes me think now, there are a lot of birds in these
mm-hmm.
these shots.
Yep.
Birds standing on poles, birds flying around,
yep.
swimming. So why a moored barge, though?
Because it's been there for a long time from the appearance of it, and that barge is parked in the Swan Island Lagoon, and the lagoon used to be the deep channel of the river. Swan Island used to be an island. And one of the things that I needed to do for this essay was to learn a lot more about the history of the river. And so I consulted old maps. I consulted contemporary maps. You can see on old maps that Swan Island is actually an island. And from what I've learned, what is now the lagoon used to be the deep channel. And the head of that channel was all filled in to connect Swan Island to the mainland. And now it's a warehouse. Mm-hmm. Plateau.
Oh, I see. It's the island is just joined by an isthmus.
It's much more of a peninsula now than an island.
Yeah, but and there's still a little channel.
There's a back channel there, and ships park there, and barges park there, and how often they move, I don't know. But this is part of the landscape now, and so I didn't want to edit.
So the next picture is of a barge with two big containers on the back.
Mm-hmm.
Or maybe it's two barges stuck together.
It's a
beautiful image of looking south along the river. There's the railroad bridge.
Mm-hmm.
And then you're looking down, you can see the Fremont Bridge. So the Fremont is picked out in white. It's this kind of white rainbow thing. And everything else is gray and silver. And then within the water, there's a jet ski person made this sinuous wake. And, you know, you can see downtown, and then there's the mountains in the background. And it's picturesque.
Right. It's picturesque, and I meant it to be that way. Most of these photographs have an attractive quality, but what I want you to do once you start looking more carefully at it is to see the details. And so that is a large barge coming down, and the boat that's taking a wide path around it is just a guy in his fishing, you know, his small little aluminum fishing boat.
Oh, that's
and,
a boat? Okay.
Yeah.
I thought
and,
it was a jet ski guy.
And I wanted to highlight the fact that this river is used a lot. It's not just salmon swimming through there, but there's barges and boats, mm-hmm. ocean-going vessels that are constantly in use. And the reason I focus on things like that is I really wanted to highlight we're trying to restore this river, but it's still being used heavily. And this strikes me as a very contemporary problem that probably has locations all over the world that are very similar. This is Portland's backyard problem.
Mm-hmm.
And so I wanted to, you know, think globally, but this is the local issue. And how are we going to deal with this? How are we going to restore it?
How did you get that shot? I mean, what's your vantage point?
I'm on the St. John's Bridge. And
oh, okay.
I'm zooming in and
just standing there.
Just standing. Yep, the St. John's Bridge offers
bicycle.
Yeah, I rode up there. St. John's Bridge offers a lot of great views of the river, and from one side or the other.
Another picture in the same vein. It's one of the smaller black and white ones. Small mm-hmm. being like 2 foot by 1 foot, that
mm-hmm.
kind of
yeah.
size. Is a tank farm.
Right. That also is taken
is that
from
Linton or?
That's it's taken from the St. John's Bridge, and we're looking on the south side of the river up towards Linton, and those actually is the Linton tank farms,
mm-hmm.
and those are gas tanks with ExxonMobil owning some of them and ARCO mm-hmm. owning some of the others, and
are they LNG or gasoline? Or what?
I believe that's gasoline, and those tank farms are actually the most serious hazard on the river because they're built on silt.
Mm-hmm.
And if the earthquake happens, mm-hmm. those tanks just, the silt liquefies and they just slide right into the river.
Mm-hmm.
And the tank farms along the river provide Oregon with something like 90% of the gasoline we burn in the state. So that's our repository and it's in the worst possible place for
mm-hmm.
it to live.
I did a story on that at the Tribune where they're trying to figure out how to stabilize the soil.
Yep.
And they're going to put bugs in the soil and they create bubbles of nitrogen.
Mm-hmm.
And that is like packing beads, you know, like polyester
right.
beads. So when the shaking starts, it absorbs a lot of the shaking and it won't liquefy. That's the theory anyway.
That's the theory.
But the big issue is these tanks because they're on these tiny concrete pads, and they're going to slip off and crack open.
And crack open,
and
yep.
And give it this massive,
right.
toxic, fumes floating whichever way the wind blows.
And so part of photographing this series of photographs meant I had to learn what it was I was looking at. Yeah. So I did a lot of research. I went to public meetings and found out some of the Superfund site has been dealt with. Some of the upland soils have been remediated. The in-river sediments are still a mess, and then there's the tank farms. And mm-hmm. so this the situation stretches well into the future. And my sense is that it's not a place that a lot of Portlanders think much about, mm-hmm. but it really is a huge question mark over the future of the river.
Yeah. Well, I think Portland's self-image is of a kind of fun town, you know.
Ecologically sensitive.
Yeah, nature, culture. But all the industrial stuff is kind of repressed, you know.
Right, here it is.
But you pick them out in this beautiful white. These tanks are bright white. Everything else is, even in the sun, is sort of gray.
Mm-hmm.
What kind of a technique did you use to get that contrast?
I take the photographs originally in color, but every single shot I'm interested in, I make the color version as well as I can, and then I also do a black and white version, and I try to make it as articulate as I can. Mm-hmm. And I'm an old darkroom rat, so my creator experience is with black and white, and I'm drawn to the forms. I'm drawn mm-hmm. to the light and to the forms, and form comes out for me much more clearly in black and white than it does in color. And I really wanted you to see those tanks. I wanted them to stand out from the trees and the surrounding riverbank.
Because mm-hmm. the sun kind of glints off the top of them, and they're just very complex shapes.
Mm-hmm.
Is this Photoshop where you switch from color to black and white?
It is. It is.
Is it a simple one-click deal?
No, it isn't. I teach photography in Beaverton, and mm-hmm. teach a digital class, and I have my students do the very same
school?
Thing. It's called ACMA, the Arts and Communication Magnet, and I have my students do the very same thing, and the thing I emphasize to them is, yes, you can convert them to black and white, but then you've just started, because now you have to go in and find the details that will really bring the rest of the image to life. Mm-hmm. Just taking a black and white version of it doesn't really tell the full story. And so you need to go in and, you know, where are your highlights? Where are the shadows you need to open? How do you draw the eye through the picture?
Mm.
And so I spend quite a bit of time sweating the details.
Is that like dodging and burning?
That's exactly what it is.
Is there a tool that looks like that?
Yep. There's a Photoshop tool, and I use it constantly.
So these kids are just going over it with this tool, highlighting certain mm-hmm. bits,
mm-hmm.
right?
You have to accent what you want people to see.
Mm-hmm.
And, you know, I tell them as photographers, you tell me what you want me to see in the picture.
Yeah.
And you do that through the shading and through the contrast.
Mm-hmm. Are there other things, you know, color in black and white, are there like temperature or the amount of contrast and stuff? I mean, I'm wondering how many hours work it is to convert a picture.
It's hard to say. It's not a fixed number, but it doesn't have. I'll just say it doesn't happen quickly. And I will stop at a certain point, and then I'll go back and look at it later and ask them what's missing. Mm-hmm. You know, you're still not done yet. What do you have to fix in the details? And I'll do work prints. And work prints are never good the first time they come out.
Sorry,
and
what's a work print?
A work print is I'll do a digital print, have it. It's one thing to see it on a computer screen because mm-hmm. it's lit. It's another thing to see it in print because that's reflective. And the quality of the tone response is different.
Mm-hmm.
And as much as you can try to calibrate your screen so that the print looks just like it, it's never the same.
So you'll do a test print on archival paper, on the final
yep.
paper.
Yep.
Okay.
I do
so
test
you're
prints,
burning
and then
I
adjust. And I used to work as a commercial printer, and I really love good looking prints. So I spent a lot of time trying to get it right.
So when you make a test print and it looks off, what would you have to go back and do?
Go back and adjust the levels. Is the shadow too dark? Can I see into the shadows? The details I want you to be able to perceive, are they clear? And mm-hmm. if they're not, then I go back and clear them up. Mm-hmm. And it may take a while, but that's, for me, that's the point. And to not do that is, why are you hanging the photograph then?
Yeah. My name is Joseph Gallivan. You are listening to Art Focus on KBOO Portland. My guest this week is John Gottschall. He's a photographer, and his show 16 Cranes is on now at Gallery 114 in the Pearl through Saturday, December 28th. So you mixed black and white and color in this, and there's one picture I really love, one of the color ones. It's a bench picked out by the angle of the light. It's a wooden bench. There's a low chain link fence, some trees, and then you can kind of tell it's overlooked because there's nothing. There's like a drop.
Yep.
And it coming out of the trees is this yellow fog. But to me, it looks like mustard gas. It's this sort of weird yellowy brown stuff. It's not the whole picture, but it's the middle of the picture.
Mm-hmm.
So what was that?
That was just about a year ago, a foggy night. And that is the bluff of the University of Portland above Swan Island. And all the light in the picture is coming up from Swan Island down below.
Artificial light.
So it's all artificial light. Yep. And that's a bench that overlooks Swan Island. It's right at the very edge of the University of Portland property.
Mm-hmm.
And it's actually a lovely sight. It's it gives you a fabulous view, but when you look down into Swan Island, at this point, all you can see is fog. But what's down there is a dry dock. Half the cranes, the 16 cranes are down there.
Mm-hmm.
There's usually some research vessels parked. That big barge that we mentioned is parked down there. It's entirely an industrial landscape.
Yeah.
And there it is, right there, smack dab in the middle of the Portland floodplain.
Mm-hmm. It's an amazing thing that you can read not just the natural landscape. I mean, people can look at the mountains and pick them out and describe the vegetation, but you can read an industrial landscape. You know, a barge from a tug, from cruise ship, from a icebreaker, or whatever the hell's down there, you know. And that's, I think we all kind of try not to look at that stuff, but
it's the infrastructure.
Yeah.
And one of the things that I wanted to learn about, because there's so much activity there, Portland actually has this area zoned to stay as an industrial area. Looking at the Port of Portland website, they claim that roughly 58,000 direct and indirect jobs depend on this area, and there's $400+ million worth of tax money that comes out of this money, out of this zone. And so at the same time, we're trying to restore it as an ecologically healthy corridor once again. It is one of the hot links of Portland to the global economy. So I know it's not going to go away. It's going to continue to be there. And so how do these two things, this to me seems like a 21st century question. How does the economic activity of this place and the environmental activity coincide? How can both function at a high level at the same time? And this is something that seems to me we've kind of got to figure out.
Tell us about that little patch of land that was contaminated by creosote that you went down.
So if you go just downstream, it'd be just to the north of University of Portland. There's a couple access roads that go down, and it takes you to the former McCormick and Baxter site, factory site, which was one of the sort of alarm bells that we have a problem down here when they started to test the soils. It's full of creosote, and the landscape is bulldozed, absolutely flat. I think University of Portland has an athletic field down there now. But when I was standing there, it struck me what a strange landscape this was. It's right next to a river. It's part of the riparian zone. It's part of the floodplain. And yet it's barren. And it just struck me as such an odd looking place in this site. It should be gorgeous there. And clearly it's damaged.
Nothing will grow? Or just
things grow.
Things
grow, but right. It's been bulldozed. And they've had a lot of soil hauled out of there. And it's fenced off. And so that's what really where the whole idea sort of took shape in my mm-hmm. head, because this is a troubled, damaged landscape, and how do you heal it while you're still using it?
Mm-hmm.
And the and one point I was walking down there, and I saw this a flower, a little bouquet of flowers growing up in this dirt, and it struck me, it's like, you're a seed, you land in the ground, you don't get to choose where you land. Sorry you had to land here, but you make the best of it. And it was this little beautiful bouquet was coming out of the ground in this bulldozed landscape, and the irony just stood out so strongly to me. And
yeah, the bottom of the river is covered in sludge, right?
Mm-hmm.
Which has got like toxic chemicals,
which has got PCBs and heavy metals.
Are they like constantly sloughing off and going into other bits of the river or into the food chain?
It does go up the food chain, and that's the problem.
Uh-huh.
You know, the microorganisms and the worms that live in that mud contain those metals and the PCBs, and then mm-hmm. they get eaten by fish. And one of the things that I learned in this research is that if a pregnant woman eats a fish out of that stretch of the river, that's it. She can't eat another one. She is maxed out on all the
fish?
On the industrial chemicals that are in that fish.
Mm-hmm.
So, and there are people that fish in that stretch of the river. There's a photograph I have of a guy fishing off the dock in the Swan Island Lagoon. It would be nice to be able to think that the osprey that are feeding their young on that fish are feeding them healthy fish.
Mm-hmm.
And so you need to do something with that sediment, because it'll be there for a long time otherwise.
So they can cap it with some kind of plastic?
Dredge it. I don't know if you can cap it, but you dredge it lot of it.
Just scoop it all out?
Scoop it all out. I'm not even sure of all the techniques that they're using. I know that's one of the common
Wouldn't
ones.
Wouldn't that kind of stir it up and make it?
That's
worse.
A problem. It does stir it up a little bit. And then what do you do with the stuff that you've dredged out? You have to find a dump to put that in and then seal it off.
Yeah. What do you think of the heretical idea of just doing nothing? Like let the river banks be destroyed for the sake of industry, because we all need gasoline and truck stuff and ship stuff. Just say the hell with it and leave it.
It'll be a lonely planet in 100 years as ecosystems collapse. As I say, this is our local version of how do you restore nature? Because it seems to me, you know, we're coming up on 7 billion people on the planet and heading towards 9. We can't continue to be toxic to our local environments. If we do, there won't be local environments left. So it's a steep learning curve,
mm-hmm.
and we're at the beginning parts of that.
There's another picture that you took, which is of one of the base of the St. John's Bridge.
Yes.
So it's like the pylon going into the mud, mm-hmm. basically. It's very mm-hmm. mossy and green
yep.
at one level. And it's got this lovely afternoon light. Why did you take that picture?
I took that picture. Actually, I was down there for Willamette Riverkeeper cleanup. And we hadn't gone into the water yet. And steaming by us on the river was a barge. And in the distance is the railroad bridge, and there's a train going across the bridge. And I thought, mm-hmm. here it is. You know, all the activity that goes on in this river.
What were you shooting?
Shooting from the hip. I was waiting to go out onto the river. And when I saw the barge go by, I went up onto the boat dock, get a little higher angle, and tried to catch the barge before it disappeared behind the bridge pile, and the train was still moving. And it's one of those moments when all the details come into play. There's seagulls standing on the wooden pilings. There's mm-hmm. people walking in the distance on the shore. And so part of what I wanted to show in this exhibit is all the different ways that the river is being used by us. And one of them is it's a recreation site. People come down there to gaze at the river. There's a lot of boaters that go up and down, people in sailboats and motorboats. So it's also a recreation site, as well as being in an industrial corridor. There's 1,000 ways that we engage in this river.
Mm-hmm.
And I wanted to cover as much of that as possible and not try to slant. It would have been very easy for me to slant this into look what we've done. This is horrible.
Mm-hmm.
And
so just show pollution.
Right. And show the ugly side. And it would have been easy to do that. And I didn't want to do that. I wanted this. It's a complicated problem.
Mm-hmm.
And I wanted the complications in all the manifestations to be there.
So you're trying to take a single image that has lots going on in it, right?
Multiple layers of use. Yeah, exactly.
So you've got one of your big color images is of a
That
ship.
Would be Terminal 5. That's a Port of Portland terminal where they do bring in grain ships.
Yeah. It's Kelly Point Park?
Just upstream from Kelly Point Park.
Yeah.
And in the foreground is a small recreational sailboat that is 4 feet deep with its centerboard in the mud on the riverbank. So that boat is not going anywhere, but I was trying to show the shift of scale from this recreational sailboat to this gigantic terminal. And it's an industrial terminal.
The pitch is called Mired,
mm-hmm.
which I thought was some kind of a echo of moored. So
yep.
The little boat is moored, but it's also mired as in stuck in the mud.
I wanted it, part of the title is I wanted the double entendre of the meaning mired, because that's what this whole place is. It's we're mired in this conflicting situation.
What does mired literally mean?
Mired means you're stuck in mud. And so that little boat is stuck in the mud, mm-hmm. but we... In terms of how we deal with problems like this, we're pretty much mired in mud too, mired in legal mud.
Yeah.
And it's also the title of the show, 16 Cranes. I wanted the double entendre of that. I wanted the idea of, you know, cranes are a shorebird, and they're beautiful, and they live on the things that are in the water. But these cranes are of a different nature. They're industrial,
mm-hmm.
and they live on the water too, but for an entirely different kind of purpose.
Right. And we got to wrap up, but let's just say this picture is beautiful in the sense you're using this gorgeous afternoon light, which
right.
reflects off all the industrial stuff with a golden
right.
hue. What? Why? You could have come back another day, or
I could have,
or photoshopped it out. Why did you go with the beauty?
Because that's what if for me, if art doesn't have some level of sensuous beauty. It doesn't attract the level of scrutiny that I wanted people to be mm-hmm. thinking about when they're looking at the pictures.
So
I wanted the beauty, I wanted that level to draw people in so that they look at the picture more seriously and then come away with some deeper thoughts other than that's a really pretty picture.
Mm-hmm. So it's kind of bait. But
yes, that's exactly what I'm...
But it has another value, like...
Mm-hmm.
If you hang it on your wall.
You absolutely. And the contradiction adds to its interest in my thinking as opposed to being a conflict. And images that have several layers of meaning are, for me, have a longer lifespan.
Mm-hmm.
Than a simple, I could have made just pretty sunset pictures and everybody would look at it and they'd walk out and not think about it mm-hmm. twice. I wanted this to stick around in your head and be an issue. Suddenly you're thinking about.
It's a great show. My name's Joseph Gallivan. You are listening to Art Focus on KBOO Portland. My guest this week was John Gottschall. He's a photographer whose show 16 Cranes is on now through Saturday, December 28th, 2019, at Gallery 114 in the Pearl. Thanks for coming back to KBOO, John.
Thank you very much for having me.
Andy Warhol looks a scream. Hang him on my wall. Andy Warhol, silver screen. Can't tell them apart at all.
This is KBOO Portland. The time is 11:58. Stay tuned for Buscando America.
And receive free gifts and prizes from the Give Guide. Just click the donate banner on the KBOO app to keep community radio strong and vibrant in Portland and beyond.
Thank you, baby. Just wanna take a little time out. Do you? Thank you, baby.
Thank you.
Thank you.
Thank you. Thank you.
Thank you.
Thank you.
Thanks.
Thank you for contributing to KBOO's membership drive. And we couldn't have done it without you.
Thank you for your post, for your like, for your click. Thank you for your love, for your care, for your kind.
Daddy, las mamás están aquí para darles información, música y diversión con el show de Mujeres Bravas, los domingos desde las 12 hasta la 1:30 de la tarde.
El que se quede en su silla sentado, que sea castigado por no saber gozar.
Amigos, te...